Hey there, this is Justin with Beyond the Uniform, the podcast. My goal is to help active duty personnel navigate their post-military career. I'm hoping to give you interviews from people who are on the other side and just sharing their experience in their industry, their functional role, the type of company, and giving you that information to do with whatever you'd like. It may encourage you to stay in the military. It may give you thoughts on what to do afterwards. But my goal is just to give you as many resources and as much ammo as possible. This week, I'm really excited. I'm talking to Blake Lindsay. Blake was Naval Academy 05. He did the surface warfare and nuclear route. And once he got out, he went straight into management consulting at McKinsey & Company, which is arguably the best, if not in the top three, consulting firms in the world. And very, very rare for someone to transition straight from the military to a role of that stature. I think this is great for any of you who are considering management consulting. Blake does a great job of breaking down not only what it is and who the players are, but what the day-to-day life is like, what the interview process is like, advice specifically for veterans on how to get in. And he also has a lot of good thoughts on just overall advantages and disadvantages coming from the military, some of those blind spots to be aware of, as well as some assets that you might not be aware of that you have that will benefit you in your career. Also, Blake did grad school while in the military. I think he's got some great thoughts on advantages of doing that, disadvantages of doing that, and how to consider graduate school in general. So hope you enjoy the show. There are notes on the website, beyondtheuniform.io. So if you want to skip around, I've detailed out the different time points that we've talked about different topics. And anything that he mentions in here about a company or about a resource, I've linked to on the website as well. So here is Blake Lindsay on transitioning from surface warfare to management consulting. And so thanks for taking the time to speak with me, and you know, very interested in your career path, and we'll get in a little bit to McKinsey, but I thought to start off, just to provide some context, would love to hear about your where you grew up, your experience at Naval Academy, and as a Nuke SWO.
Yeah, definitely. So I grew up kind of all over the country. My dad used to work for a big insurance company, and so we moved around a lot. So I ended up going to three high schools in three states, and so bounced around, kind of had that lifestyle for a while, and was always interested in going to one of the service academies, and so ended up getting accepted to Navy, went there. Looking back, I absolutely loved it. I played rugby. So I captained the rugby team, made the greatest friends that I still keep in touch with to this day, that I think that I ever could have. And so just sort of a wonderful experience there. Coming out, all my friends, interestingly enough, were, going into the SEALs or going Marines or, naval aviation. That was sort of the three things that everybody wanted to do. And I was like, I think I'm going to go into Nuke SWO. And I think it was more of a academic curiosity and just sort of the challenge of it, because I understood that it was a pretty difficult program. So got selected to go Nuke SWO and then did that. And so over the course of my Navy career, I first was on a destroyer, so earned my surface warfare officer pin there, so not doing any nuke stuff, and also ran the visit board search and seizure team. So was doing boardings in the Gulf and off the Horn of Africa for a couple of years, and then I went back to nuke school. So spent a year in South Carolina, 6 months doing the actual school, and then another 6 months doing the hands-on training that they call prototype. Finished that, and then went back to the West Coast. Up in Seattle on an aircraft carrier, USS John C. Stennis. I was there for 2.5 years or so, working down in the nuke plants. Really challenging job, like really hard hours, really high pressure, and like a lot of high focus from the CO and on down. But overall, I think a really, really rewarding experience that ultimately opened a lot of doors for me and kind of drove me into the career path that I landed on now.
And at what point, between the Naval Academy and your time in the surface fleet, at what point did you make that decision to transition? When did you know that you wanted to get out?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. It was tough. You know, I think it sort of evolved for me over the course of my career. I really enjoyed my time in the Navy, and I enjoyed the work that I was doing. You know, I think it may have been a little bit of like the grass is greener syndrome, but ultimately, I think that what I was looking for was I wanted to step out and challenge myself in a different way. So I think it was, I don't know, a year or two into my new career, when it was coming up to, hey, do I want to take shore orders or do I want to get out? I was very much on the fence, and I think the decision for me was based on if I don't know that I want to stay, like if I really don't think that I want to make a career, then I just want to go ahead and make the transition and start sort of getting my feet wet working in business. And so it was actually a very challenging decision, but I think it all sort of works out in the end. Sure, I absolutely miss the Navy in a lot of ways, but you know, I'm not disappointed with the choices that I made.
And just out of curiosity, what are the things you miss most about active duty and miss least?
Yeah, so I mean, the miss least is probably the easiest because it's a tough lifestyle, right? I don't miss having weekend duty. You know, I don't miss being on port and starboard or five and dive watch rotations for anybody that listens to this that was in the Navy. You know, shipyard periods where you're fast cruising and, you know, the 9-month deployment cycles. It's just that was really hard. You get used to it and you get kind of numb to it. But once you're not doing it anymore and you realize, wow, that was pretty tough. The things that I do miss, though, is what comes from that is just this incredible sense of camaraderie, incredible sense of teamwork, and sort of this ability to communicate, you know, within your teams and you know, with your the enlisted people or with the officers or with whomever that's going through that with you, in a way that is very personal and very connected, and you're all sort of driving towards the same mission. You know, the corporate world, the public sector it's not the same. It's a little bit more of an individual life, and that's okay. But you miss some of the wonderful team aspects that you really got from being in the service.
Yeah, I feel really similarly, and it's almost like those two go together, that because of the shared misery and because of that painful experience, it brings you so much closer to those that you're working with. There's that common suffering that you know, probably people in Chicago relate to with the weather that seems to bond people a little bit closer.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
And when you got out, did you choose to do the reserves, or how did you evaluate that decision?
So for me, it was the same sort of thought process as getting out of the Navy. I'm a very like black or white type of guy. So for me, I guess I was feeling like, so I didn't do the reserves. And I think I was feeling like, well, I either want to do this or I don't want to do this. I don't want to sort of like stay, you know, partially tied in. You know, I don't know if that was the right decision or not. That was probably a little bit more emotional than it was. And I think I was like, you know, look, if I decide I don't want to do this, then I don't want to have the, you know, fear or of getting deployed again or something like that. And so it was probably a little bit more of an emotional decision than anything else that I did. But yeah, I decided not to based on just this. I'm either in or I'm out, and if I wanted to be out and I wanted to focus on an entirely new career, that was sort of what I did. Had a lot of buddies that stayed in, and I actually did the reserves, and I have a few friends that I work with at McKinsey that are in the reserves, right? And they make it work, and you know they enjoy it, and I think that's a wonderful thing to do. I just, for me, it was more of a make a clean break.
For those colleagues that are doing the reserves, does McKinsey allow them to take their, because that's what, 1 weekend a month and 2 weeks a year, is does that 2 weeks count as vacation or is that just given to them?
I think it's just given to them. Okay. I think you can do it in different ways. I think what they'll do is they'll say, we will just, you know, like hold your wages for 2 weeks or whatever, or you can take paid vacation if you want to. Like, it depends on how you want to do it, but they're very supportive. And I think the biggest issue that I hear with guys is trying to thread this into their schedule. McKenzie's actually a very flexible place from that perspective. It's hard to spend time away from work, but you know, if the Navy is saying you have to do reserve time in these 2 weeks, it's much more easy to accommodate it from the McKenzie side. We can say, okay, well, you're going to be gone those 2 weeks. That's fine.
That's great. And you're unique in that you were able to do not just SWO and the Nuke pipeline, but on top of that, you were doing the Old Dominion University while in the Navy. And I'm curious, how did you consider doing the degree while in the Navy versus just postponing it until you got out?
Yeah, so I think I was pretty fortunate. All the Navy Nukes are pretty fortunate. So you actually, through the training and the education that you get around the nuclear program, you get graduate credits towards you know, these majors at Old Dominion. And it's basically you get Naval postgraduate school credits that you can then apply and finish out with the Old Dominion. And for me, it was kind of like, look, you know, I'd gone through all this training. I'd gone through all the schooling. I only had to do a little bit more. It was, you know, call it 8 or 9 classes, something like that, to finalize and round out the master's. And so for me, it was like, you know, this is a no-brainer. I should absolutely do this because I have this opportunity. And then if I want to go and get another master's because I'm interested in something else, then I can. But for me, it was much more the ability to say, I've checked the box, I've got a master's degree. And I don't know if that's the way that you should look at it, but that was kind of how I did. So I finished it. I actually finished it after I got, after I transitioned out, I was actually already working with McKinsey. When I finalized my master's, which was not the recommended path because it was kind of tough to be working on both. I felt like I would just be passing on a really great opportunity if I didn't do it, because I had it there.
Yeah, especially when the incremental effort to receive something so concrete, it sounds like a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. Is there any advice you'd have to someone who's pursuing a similar degree at ODU or just to someone who's considering doing graduate work while in the Navy?
Yeah, definitely. So what I see a lot, you know, I do a lot of veterans recruiting here at McKinsey, and a lot of guys coming out of the military just have the sense of, I have got to go to you know, business school or you know, go get my master's and something like that. Look, first of all, there's nothing wrong with going and getting your master's, and yes, all it's going to do is sort of like help you and set you up. But my advice to them is like, what you realize is that your experience coming out of the military, depending on what you've done and the way that you can sort of frame up the experiences that you've had, actually puts you quite a bit of, in my opinion, kind of a cut above anybody else that's been working in industry for 5 years, as well as somebody that just went straight to, you know, grad school and is coming in to apply for a job. And so your options aren't as limited as you feel like they are when you're coming out of the military. It's pretty scary. I remember doing it, and the transition is really hard. And I think a lot of folks just say, I've got to go get my MBA so that I can – because nobody's even going to talk to me about, you know, getting a business job. You know, I didn't. You know, I applied for McKinsey. I tried to tailor what my experiences and skill sets were to – you know, what would be valuable to this organization, and, you know, got the opportunity to interview and got hired. And so my advice is just make sure that you are, if you want to go to grad school, right? Go get a degree, have a great time, and it'd be a special thing. But if you are uncertain about whether or not you want to go to grad school and the feeling is I need to go because that's the only way that I'm going to be, you know, employable in the way that I want to be, I don't think that that's true, and you should do as much due diligence on what job opportunities there are for you in whatever arena that you want to work in as you do in trying to investigate which schools that you want to go to, and then make that choice based off of, you know, sort of the balance of the whole.
I think that's incredible advice, and I think that the opportunity cost of the 2 years. So I went to grad school after the Navy and enjoyed that. And it is a very big opportunity cost and foregone earning potential, and it's a tremendous sum of money to spend for a couple of years of education. And your ability to do that, mostly while in the military, not just the time savings, but the cost savings in doing that is hard to understate or yes. overstate. And yes. I wanted to talk to you about McKinsey and management consulting in general, just for the context that I'm coming from. I think one of the reasons why I had reached out was I think it's very, especially for a military audience, it is extremely rare. In fact, I'm not sure I know of anyone who was able to transition straight from the military to McKinsey, which is a top tier, you know, the top 1 to 3 consulting firms, depending on who you speak with. And, you know, my background was I went from submarines to the business school at Stanford and did my summer internship at McKinsey in New York and received a full-time offer. And it was an extremely competitive process, even amongst Stanford business school students, which is one of the best business schools in the world. And so for my context, to realize how tough it was for me to get that position and that you were able to go straight there, it's an incredible accomplishment. And so I have lots of questions for you around your McKinsey experience, but maybe just starting for those who are unfamiliar with management consulting or unfamiliar with McKinsey, how would you explain both of those to them?
Yeah, absolutely. So what I would say is management consulting, sort of at its core, is we are organizations. So they talk about like kind of 3 big firms. There's McKinsey, Bain, and BCG, or Boston Consulting Group. And then you've got kind of Deloitte's and Accenture's, for those of you who are interested in consulting. But from a management consulting perspective, the way that we think about it is that we develop long-term, long-standing relationships with big major clients, so all of the largest companies in the world, and help them to solve their biggest problems and help them to help guide them through changes in markets and industries and, you know, weather storms, and set strategic direction that allows them to continue to succeed in the way that they always have. So that's sort of management consulting as a whole. McKinsey, we focus, we do a little bit of everything, right? I work specifically in the operations practice, but we have, you know, strategy practices, we have operations practices, we've got just hospital services practices. There's a very broad base of functions that we serve. And so specifically what I do is I help organizations typically that either make something or provide some sort of service, figure out how to make or provide that service better while, you know, reducing costs for their production facilities and helping the overall organization and culture to improve through long-term sort of strategic changes and initiatives.
And how does that translate on like a day-to-day basis? What's your life like day-to-day and week-to-week with McKinsey?
Yeah, so I'm like a hands-on consultant for my clients. And so I actually do typically travel Monday to Thursday, depending on where my clients are. So I live in Denver, Colorado, but my client bases are a major client in Seattle, major client in Philadelphia, and another major client in Texas that I do a lot of work with. And so I'm typically traveling to those places during the week to meet with my clients and you know, sort of work with them. What I do is, so I lead a team of other consultants who, what we do is we carve out, we identify issues for our clients and we carve out, you know, a consultant to sort of work that issue. And then I help that person solve the problem in a clear and distinct way and make, you know, recommendations on sort of the back end. And then taking it one step further, I also work on the implementation aspect of it. And so on a day-to-day basis, I'm actually working side by side with my clients to help them set up, you know, a management infrastructure and a framework by which they can actually go and tackle these problems and make sure that they're driving it, right? And then we measure our impact by dollars that were savings or, revenues that are being generated or whatever the sort of the end goal is. But I really help them do the day-to-day, how do I run a major transformation program, sort of start to finish, right? And make sure that it doesn't lose steam, which a lot of them often do. So that's sort of my day-to-day and my focus area.
And when you're interacting with these organizations, what's your internal team look like? Like, how many people are you usually working with, and what are those people like?
Yeah, so what's kind of cool about McKinsey is that it's an incredibly diverse group, right? We're a big global firm, and so I get to bring the right people to the right problem at the right time from internally, right? So I'm actually running a team of six right now, which is actually – in McKinsey standards is an enormous team. You probably remember that, Justin. But, from a Navy standard, I used to have a team of 45 folks, right, when I was a nuke. So, but it's a very different type of leadership. So my team is highly varied, and it's individuals. You can kind of almost think of them each as like an independent contractor, and they have a problem, and they're very smart, very driven, very dedicated people that are and they all have incredibly varied, really unique, neat backgrounds. That's one of the things that I really love about working here is that it's just I meet really neat, interesting people every day. But they are working and just trying to drive their problem to a solution space, and I'm helping them and kind of coaching them to do that. So the leadership aspect of it is very one-on-one and like very hands-on coaching and very sort of like supportive and kind of like always being there for them versus the military leadership where it's like, hey, I've got a big group, but I do all of my sort of leadership a lot through the chiefs, and the chiefs are sort of like running, in these separate groups. And you're just sort of managing it all and making sure that everything's going okay versus like really going and sitting with one person and daily teaching them how to do their job.
Mm. That actually brings up something I was going to ask about is, so in speaking about leadership and management, I was curious, what has been most helpful from your military background and your work? And what has also been the biggest point of learning or kind of catching up to civilian counterparts?
Yeah, great question. I think the greatest thing that the greatest thing that I brought was sort of a sense of calm in the face of adversity, right? I mean, being in the military, it's high-paced, it's high pressure. You get yourselves – you're constantly in situations that are frankly scary in a lot of ways, right? And you've got to be able to stay calm. You've got to be able to lead a team through that. And you sort of have to be the person that's, looked to and, stays calm in the face of that adversity. McKinsey is a very, very high-paced, high-pressure job. And the ability to sort of stay calm in the face of all of that and, like, all the pressure and the what's going on has been a huge benefit to me from a leadership perspective, right? I try to bring calm into my team room with my team, because if they're freaking out about something, they're probably not going to be performing at their best. And so taking that from the military, I think, is probably one of the best assets. The thing that I think was hardest to sort of assimilate into is that I work in a very non-hierarchical organization, so we call it like very flat, a meritocracy, all these like little buzzwords. But effectively what it means is I don't have a boss. I just have – everybody sort of plays a role within the organization, and obviously I'm sort of beneath people in respects, but I don't really report to anybody. And being able to get used to that and realizing that people that are even at the very top of the food chain at McKinsey are just people, and I can drop them an email or give them a call anytime I want to – was a pretty big change for me coming from the military. I think about it as like I have access to the admiral of a strike group that I worked in anytime I want to. I can just go and make sure that I can get 15 minutes or 30 minutes on their calendar. So it's a very big shift to figure out how to manage that instead of just saying, I'm a dude that sits in this little spot and I have a very specific job and I'm just going to go and get it done.
Yeah, it's a unique organization in that it seems like it's so well aligned, where everyone is pointing towards doing the best work possible, and in a relatively egoless way of anyone is on call to bring to bring their skills to bear on a problem, and it's really incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a fun place to work for sure.
With the circling back to the day-to-day lifestyle, what are the hours like, and how often do you end up working on weekends?
Yeah, so, you know, McKinsey kind of, unfortunately, is a little bit notorious for being, you know, sort of like one of the longer working hours, right? So I would say that I work, when I'm traveling, when I'm on the road, it's pretty easy just to go ahead and put in a pretty long day. So my regular day is, you know, I'm up early, like 5 or 5:30. I do my workouts in the morning. I'm into the office around 7:30. I'll usually stay in the office until 6:30 or 7, working with my team, until sort of like the last team member leaves. Go, I eat, and then I work another, you know, couple hours answering emails or, you know, kind of creating presentations for conversations I'm going to have with clients the next day or that sort of thing. So, you know, I mean, I'm working 13, 14, 15-hour days pretty frequently, like Monday through Thursday. I do not. For me, it is incredibly rare to work on the weekends. This place is just like anything else. Like work is a gas. It will fill the space that you provide it. And so I just I hard stop at 5 o'clock on Friday. I do not re-engage until Monday morning, unless I have like specifically talked to somebody that I'm going to engage on something like Sunday evening. So that's the way that I do. I set that boundary because that's important to me, because that was something that one of the reasons that I got out of the Navy. So for me, it's very sustainable, and it's not overly burdensome. I think some people come out and they feel like they have to work all the time, and it's more of an optics thing than a productivity thing. Mm. And it's unfortunate to see, but
there is a lot of overlap with that in entrepreneurship. It can definitely, I used to call it keeping FaceTime with myself, where it was not benefiting anyone, but my sense of what I should be doing. And I'd love to hear, what was the interview process like? So coming straight from the military, how did you prepare for that interview, and what was the interview process for McKinsey like?
Oh, yeah. So the interview process is also kind of notorious. It's very long. I think I interviewed probably 8 or 9 times through the course of it. And so you do first round, well, you do like kind of pre-screening and then first round interviews and then final round interviews. And it's very structured. And we do what we call is a PEI, or personal experience interview. So you spend about 20, 30 minutes talking about who you are, your experiences, right? So something that's typically the easier for the military guys to come out, guys and girls to come out and talk through what they've done. And then the second half of each of these interviews, we do a case study. So it's actually a business case, and it's something where this is a typical type of scenario that McKinsey would be engaged on. And so that is the thing that, you know, people that go to business school have a pretty distinct advantage over somebody like me who just came straight out of the Navy, knowing how to talk to these things and how to think through these things. I think probably at the end of the day, I got like dumb lucky and, you know, bumbled my way sufficiently through these things. But I did, to that point, have to prepare quite a bit, because once I understood what the interview process was like, I had to spend a lot of time practicing my case interviews. And so, you know, I had to buy some books. I had to get a lot of coaching and practice with a lot of people. Luckily, McKinsey is pretty cool about finding somebody that they want and then like really trying to make you successful. So they will provide a lot of coaching from consultants who do interviews. And I do that for people now. But yeah, very, very challenging, and it's a very long process. So, sorry, I'm going to get on my soapbox. Because I do a lot of recruiting, but, the process is pretty long and drawn out. And so, you know, I encourage folks to get involved in it early, because, I know what it's like trying to get out of the Navy or the military, and you say, oh, wow, I've got a wife, I got kids, I need to get a job. And then you're telling me that it's going to take 3 months to interview through this thing? Like, no thanks. So get involved early. Like, let yourself kind of have that opportunity if it's something that you're interested in.
That's great. And I know we only have a couple minutes left here. One thing I was curious about is just explaining the general career path if you were to stay in management consulting and stay at McKinsey, and then also for those that you've seen who have gotten out, what are kind of common paths that you see people go from management consulting?
Yeah, so within management consulting, my firm is a firm, so you can kind of think about it like a law firm. So the path is to partnership. So you're either sort of working to become a partner or you're not. There's you know, a lot of other things that you can do for the firm, but as a consultant, typically what you're doing is trying to drive towards becoming a partner. So that's what you're doing, right? And so you are developing your skill set, and then you're, you know, kind of moving along the ladder, if you will, of, you know, developing clients, creating opportunities for others, developing a core set of knowledge or skills that become sort of marketable for our firm, if you will, and, you know, and then a board would elect you to become a partner, which is, and it's a very quick career trajectory. So, you know, start to finish, it's typically going to take like 7 years to make partner or so. So there's a lot, that being said, it's kind of, it can be a bit of a pressure cooker, but that's, it's designed like that by nature. But for the folks that take off ramps, I mean, it's really cool because management consulting, it's actually, I think, a pretty highly regarded career path. And so the folks that are leaving are coveted in any industry. So I see people leave and go into just about everything, private equity, entrepreneurs like yourself that go and sort of do their own startups. I've seen people go into education and work in trying to solve big problems in the public sector and for governments. Folks that go and run big strategic groups at Amazon or Uber. So it's very, very broad. I think you build a skill set that's valuable in that you, on a day-to-day, are punching above your weight class, right? So, I mean, I in 30 minutes, have to meet with a vice president of a Fortune 100 company, right? And it's a not uncommon occurrence. And, hey, you know, I'm 31 and I don't think of myself that highly, but you know, if I was working in the corporate world, it would take me a long time to get that experience level. And so we actually we have a skill set and an experience level coming out of management consulting that is highly regarded in that respect.
That's great. One last question, if you have time for it, is just any last advice you'd give either on the personal side or professional side to someone who's on active duty and thinking of getting out and pursuing a career in management consulting.
Absolutely. You know, I joined management consulting because I didn't know what I wanted to do when I grew up. And I knew that this would be a good way to sort of see a lot of different industries and that. If you've got a passion about what you want to go and do, you know, go and pursue it. What I would say is that I know that it feels like, hey, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side in the military. And oftentimes it can be for whatever your personal reasons or professional reasons are. But make sure that like you are really seeing the full picture because, hey, work is work. And like, you know, you get out and you've got to sort of hit the ground running. And it's not easy, right? It's not that my life is necessarily easier in private sector, right? So be thoughtful about what you're doing and why you want to make the transition. And that will help both guide the decision to leave as well as guide your decision about what you want to go and do. And your first job coming out of the military doesn't have to be the job that you're going to retire from, right? Mm-hmm. It can be something that you just want to go and get experience at and then go and see a lot of stuff. There's a lot of opportunities. Figure out which one you want and go take it.
Yeah, that's great advice. It seems so often like you're signing another 5-year contract, you know, and it's like, no, there's a lot more flexibility and you're not wedded to it.
Exactly.
Awesome. Well, thank you for your time on this. I really appreciate it.
No, of course, Justin. Thanks for having me on here. I really, really appreciate the thought, and great chatting with you.
Surface.
All right, that's all for today. If you have any feedback on how I can make this information more useful, or if you know of someone who would be a good person to interview, please drop me a note. You can do that at beyondtheuniform.io. Thanks, and see you next week.